listening to The Lonely TARDIS Season 2, Episode 11, Your Journey Through Time Lords and Space. We are America's most favoritest Doctor Who podcast. Actually, no, we're the world's favorite Doctor Who podcast. The most favoritestest. I am Dolly Domofsky. Joining me, as usual, Stephen Strum.
Hey, everybody.
And Sean Norton.
We're everybody's favorite because of our firm grasp on the English language.
Exactly.
Favoriteest ever.
Most definitely. How are you guys tonight?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I am ready to talk about this wonderful latest episode of Doctor Who. And
I guess it didn't leave you cold.
Oh, nice. Nice. No, it did not. But I guess we'll get to that in a bit. Stephen, how's it going for you over there, buddy?
Right now? Just in general or in regards to the podcast?
How's life, man? How you doing? You doing all right? You need anything? Want me to go get you something?
I have water here. I bought a bunch of comics. Okay. I'm just reading Batwoman. Or I was reading Batwoman.
I picked up another Doctor Who comic book. I've been like just grabbing all those graphic novels. There's a brand new one out, again based on the Daleks, that was just released recently. So
a graphic novel, or are they doing that?
No, graphic novel. Individual.
Oh, cool!
It's a hardcover graphic novel. It just came out this like a month or so ago, I believe.
Which Doctor?
11th.
Nice. Okay. I think the last time we talked about Who Comics proper was the Star Trek crossover, right?
Yeah. I've also finished that second book. Maybe we can talk about that next time. But I finished the second book. Stephen, I know you picked up the graphic novel as well, right?
No, I didn't pick up the graphic novel. I just picked up the first loose issue.
Okay.
I don't even think I read all the way through that either.
Yeah. I wish I didn't read through the first graphic novel.
I like that we have such a rigid agenda on this show.
Yeah.
That anything we bring up on the fly in our intro segment, we immediately push to next week.
Yeah, and we'll be forgotten by next week, which is even better. But we are going to talk about the Cold War because we want to. It's the latest episode in our wonderful season of Doctor Who. It's the third episode of the second half. So 7.2.3, I guess that's what you'd probably call it, right?
Yeah,
maybe. I suppose.
It's
season, or like, whatever, 8.5?
Something.
Right, or 7, I guess 8, right? If you were just doing the whole season.
Yeah. But let me do a quick recap of the episode. So, this episode... We need, like, recap bumper music.
Yeah, right?
Remix!
Get some production value.
Did I get it wrong?
That's right. So, we...
Damn it, Storm.
We have the Doctor and Clara exiting the TARDIS with the Doctor yelling, Viva Las Vegas! Wait a minute, this isn't Las Vegas. It's a submarine. It's a Russian sub. Doctor and Clara have appeared on a Russian sub, Soviet submarine, in 1983, smack dab in the middle of the Cold War, hence the name of the episode, but not really. We'll find out why. So, while they're kind of figuring things out with the Russian captain, they're played by one of my favorite actors recently, Liam Cunningham, who plays Davos Seaworth on Game of Thrones. So it was actually quite a good weekend for geek fans to have one of our favorite actors pop up. And so while they're kind of trying to figure things out, They come to realize, Doctor realizes that, oh, hey, this Soviet sub has actually picked up an alien in a big chunk of ice. That alien turns out to be one of the ice warriors, which is Martian, I believe.
Spoilers, it was not a mammoth.
They're still trying to clone those. This ice warrior's manages...
What was with that line, exactly?
What was that?
What was it, that line exactly?
Which line? The mammoth line?
Oh, I must be on a huge delay right now because I'm coming in way late into this. Yeah, the mammoth. It was like they kept saying, "Is it a mammoth?" But the ice block was the size of like a, you know, small, very small room. I don't. The mammoth thing seemed kind of weird to me.
Maybe it was a baby mammoth.
Yeah, could be. It could very well be. Anyways, the one of the sailors prematurely breaks open the block of ice. The ice warrior comes out and kind of terrorizes the ship a little bit. The doctor tries to calm him down and says, you know, there's we have no issue with you. We want to be peaceful. Meanwhile, a sailor shoots the ice warrior and all hell breaks loose. The ice warrior, it kind of starts to murder people on the ship. And wants to destroy the planet since he can't get back to his. He believes all of his Martian compadres or his alien friends are dead. And so he decides to try to blow up the planet Earth with the nukes and the sub, but that doesn't quite work. Doctor ends up talking him down. The Ice Warrior, also known as Grand Marshal Skaldek, a decorated Ice Warrior, ends up leaving planet Earth, and everybody is happy. Beams out of there a la Star Wars or Star Trek and heads home. That's it. That was the recap. Short and sweet.
That was really good.
Yeah.
I really wasn't prepared to be talking again this quick. I figured you had at least another 10 minutes. It was good. So do we go into what we thought about it?
Let's hop right in there. First and foremost, I want to get your guys' opinions on the return of the Ice Warriors. What do you guys feel about the return of an Ice Warrior, a character that hasn't been seen in Doctor Who for a couple decades at least?
Stormy, you're up.
Actually, when I saw the whole ice thing, my first thought was towards the Waters of Mars, and I thought we were maybe going to see a reference to that at some point. And it turns out we kind of did. It was the Martians. Ice Warriors. I liked the new design. You know, it looks pretty of the suit that is. It looks pretty. It's kind of like the Suntarans, right? It's like kind of a old timey, kind of almost hokier kind of look, but they've, you know, modernized it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The actual character himself, what was it, Stardak or Starlak?
Skaldak.
Skaldak. He didn't really do much for me as like just a new kind of villain or threat or anything like that. He seemed kind of just, you know, he was just kind of a militant dude that did a bunch of bad stuff and then at the end kind of went away. And that was interesting. But the, you know, like you said, the reintroduction of a new old villain, I don't know if it was necessarily necessary. Mm-hmm. The Ice Warriors to me don't really stick out as being any kind of particularly great old villain or anything. It's interesting to see that Martians are still around in this version of Doctor Who. I think that's interesting, and I think it's something that will probably come into play later on. At some point, there will probably be a more fleshed out episode featuring the Ice Warriors again, like we can kind of see. That's kind of how I feel about it. What's that?
It definitely opens the door now for them to use them in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, I like the characters of the Ice Warriors. I almost wonder. Oh, we lost Steven. I'm sure he'll be back on in a second here. I almost wonder if I hate to say they were filler, but they did kind of feel like a filler. an evildoer or a monster of the week. And just bringing a classic Doctor Who villain
it's
on there.
Very, very Monster of the Week, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because I don't think that they're going to tie back into any future appearances. It was nice to see them, but I think they could have been much more menacing. You know? It was a nice use of...
I think you're nuts.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think you're nuts if you think they're not going to ever feature back in again in future appearances.
Well, no. I think in the rest of the season, I don't think they'll be back.
Oh, in the rest of the season? Probably not.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a couple of things that I actually kind of liked a lot. I love that they were able to capture the claustrophobic feel of a submarine. They made these nicely designed tubular hallways, and they may have used the same set over and over again, but from different angles. but it definitely felt claustrophobic, and it brought along a lot of that, the feel of the Alien films with,
yeah, they nailed the vibe.
You know, it, with that vibe, exactly. And this was definitely kind of a, there was a lot more terror in this episode, I guess, than there was in the previous one, just because this creature now, who was out of his suit, and the doctor even says that an ice warrior out of its armor is even more dangerous because they're desperate. And so out of being out of his shell means it's dishonor, you know, it's a big dishonor for him, but he's desperate. He believes his entire race is gone, so now he wants to end everything. It's the only way he's going to be able to cope, I guess. But I thought that him kind of running through the ventilation, you know, system there and dropping down from rafters and stuff to murder people, I thought was a nice homage to Alien.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, partially because I think it was just because I don't think the CGI was terribly fantastic on him. Yeah. I don't think Doctor Who is at its best when they're using CGI. I think they would have been better served with a prosthetic Martian rather than the CGI one. But I think that at that point, but the decision to make him all lizard like would have made him look pretty damn Silurian-ish.
Yeah, so yeah, I agree.
I don't know what else you would have done there. So that kind of. John, go ahead.
Oh. No, yeah, I was going to ask, you know, what you guys thought about the reveal overall, because that's a first for Who. You know, these guys have shown up 2, 3, 4 times, whatever it was in the past, but, you know, nobody's ever known what they look like inside the armor.
Yeah, so. That I like that a lot, and I think part of that is because it, so I one thing I felt, and we kind of talked to this a couple times already in the last couple episodes, but I really feel like the remainder of the season is an homage to Doctor Who history. And so they're trying to tie up some loose ends here and there that they can throughout kind of the Doctor Who mythos. And so the Ice Warriors, you never knew what the Ice Warriors looked like under their armor. And they did have a couple different variations of their armor, just kind of looking around on the web and seeing that in previous episodes. But so this was, it was an homage, I felt, to kind of more classic Doctor Who from like the 60s and 70s and stuff. And I still think that it just continues that trend of the season being a return to classic Who in some way or another.
I mean, you look at the snowmen, you had the Great Intelligence, which was a callback. Yeah. You had the next episode was also the Great Intelligence, another callback. You had the grandfather, which wasn't, I mean, they've had mummy type characters on Doctor Who before that were actually aliens. That's one thing. But the whole thing about him being grandfather and everything is a callback to the first Doctor. And then you've got another Ice Warrior, which is also a callback. So, yeah, you're right about that, at least.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, okay, so backing up for me a little bit, I like the episode a lot. I was talking to Steven about this over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
I had to rectify with myself, you know, the fact that it didn't serve any larger narrative.
Right.
It didn't tie into any end goal, any build up to the 50th or whatever, or the Doctor's Secret or Clara. Or whatever. But once I did that, and that's on me, you know, by no means is Who obligated to do any of that. And I'm sure this still ties into how Moffat was approaching most things much more movie of the week, you know. Or a movie week, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think they did a lot of good, you know, a lot more than they did anything bad in this episode.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought everybody was perfectly cast, you know, with, you know, you always have your cliches and stuff on Who, and that first officer, whoever he was, jonesing for war and all this other crap, you know, whatever. But I actually thought they redeemed that character with the back and forth he had with, you know, the Ice Warrior before he kind of got dismembered. so it was just interesting. Every time I kind of was like, oh, I don't know about this, they brought it back, and I thought they really managed to create a balanced, well-executed, well-designed, very well-acted hour of television. And again, it is Monster of the Week, right? It's it's very like, we're going to bring this guy in, we're going to do him justice. And they did. He was awesome. He was a great, great, great villain for the most part. And, you know, and it's fine. It's a standalone thing or whatever. The problem with, you know, the way I approach it, and I readily admit this, is the number one thing that stood out to me was one line of dialogue that had nothing to do with the enemy or anything else. And actually, I'm getting my episodes confused. I'm actually thinking of the one I missed with you guys. But for me, that's kind of what sticks out, right? So my overall point is I love the fact that they brought them back. I love the fact that they can use them now moving forward. I was thinking of the granddaughter line from the which still sticks out to me because what you said, like they're doing this homage and, you know, they're doing so much throwback. But I don't know. I don't necessarily think this episode really was anything in particular beyond, okay, we have these cool guys from then. What kind of story can we do with them? Oh, okay, we can put them on a submarine. Okay, that sounds awesome. Now you've got aliens and whatever else. Horror movie, you know, mythos and stuff like that. And, yeah, overall, very well executed. I liked what they did with Clara. I like that she's her own unique take on the companion, which is growing every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this she's smart, she's confident, she's funny. But at the same time, he's like, you better stay here. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. He's like... Oh, okay. All right, cool.
She seems to me like a almost like a cross between the the independence, or kind of, let me rephrase it, the youthful exuberance of Rose, Rose Tyler, where she was always kind of curious and bubbly and just trying to figure things out and be a part of things, but had the independence of like a Donna Noble. You know, so it was almost like she definitely speaks her mind when she needs to, and she's willing to make quick sacrifices and even lie in some respects if she needs to. But I just don't felt that they advanced her story, which we felt that one of the themes for this entire second half of the season was going to be, what's Clara all about? What does she bring to this table? Why is she the impossible companion? And it seems like this episode and last episode, they have completely skirted that issue.
Oh yeah, they absolutely have, but they have time, right?
I mean,
to be perfectly honest, we've kind of gotten to the point where we really should condition ourselves, and I won't be able to do this because of how I absorb my Who, but we really should condition ourselves to not learn next, you know, deeply for the last episode or two.
I do want to say one thing is that I disagree that they didn't do anything with Clara in the last episode. I thought Rings of Akaten was a big.
Oh, that was huge.
For in terms of her character.
I think this was just more the theme of he's super paranoid about her. She's died twice on him.
Yes.
Like he was very protective of her until he couldn't be.
Yeah.
I almost think that protective nature is kind of smothering the character a little bit. She doesn't have a lot of time to shine herself. It's so much of the doctor rescuing her and the doctor protecting her. And it, you mentioned Donna Noble, and I do feel that there are flashes of Donna Noble at times, like definitely her being more independent and kind of stepping away from the doctor at times. But so much of the time he is constantly hovering over her. And I think it's just kind of overshadowing her character a little bit, the way they've kind of written that.
Sure.
I would be inclined to agree more if she wasn't so quick to stand up to him and she wasn't so quick to do what they, you know, I feel like she plays it very smart in the moment. You know, she can be brave, she can be quick or whatever, but at the same time, if she knows she should stay somewhere, she's going to stay, and she's going to talk to, you know, the, I don't know, was he a scientist or archaeologist?
Professor.
Professor on the boat. So I mean, I get the criticism. I think they will need to be careful moving forward now that we're 3-4 episodes in of this Clara thing. But I think if they keep her as this kind of firecracker character that she is, this strong, independent character, for the most part, as long as they keep fleshing out why the doctor's doing what he's doing and she's a counterbalance to that, I think it'll be okay.
Hmm.
One thing I want to point out about the overall quality of this episode, which I didn't mention earlier, but I'll take this opportunity. This episode was written by Mark Gatiss.
Yes, yeah.
And this episode is a huge step up for him as opposed to his last episode, which was Night Terrors. he also did The Idiot's Lantern, which in my estimation is one of the worst episodes of Doctor Who ever. And I'm just looking through his list of what he's worked on in episodes, mm-hmm. and he has a spotty track record, if you ask me.
Sure.
So, but I think this is his best one so far. I think it's better than he did The Unquiet Dead, Idiot's Lantern, Victory of the Daleks, Night Terrors, Cold War, and he's got one upcoming episode called The Crimson Horror. I think Victory of the Daleks was probably his best one, and I'm not a huge fan of Victory of the Daleks.
Well, it's all relative, right? I mean, the best for him doesn't mean it's very good Who, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He was... You, like do you realize that he was Professor Lazarus in the Lazarus Experiment?
Yeah. I didn't know that. It's very interesting. I feel like everywhere I read, most people aren't super thrilled with his stories. Mm-hmm. But he keeps writing. Like, he writes a lot of Who relative to other people they bring in each year.
He was in the first season. It did episode 3.
Yeah. So they must dig it. I mean, I don't know. I know critical reception to this was good, and I know a lot of people would agree with, you know, your analysis, Stephen, that this is a big step up for him. So maybe that's his knack. Maybe he's better with these kind of small – not that he ever did, like, a big overarching story, but maybe these smaller, more intimate, terrifying kind of thrillers. I don't know.
His upcoming episode will feature Vastra, Jenny, and Strax. So,
that's going to be great.
He's got a lot to live up to, though, if you ask me, because I've grown to love those characters in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, they've actually done a great job. I mean, I don't quite understand them in the sense of how they fit into Who right now. You know, aside from the mysterious, he died and a friend brought him back to life. And the Silurian living in, you know, 18th century, 19th century England.
I mean...
With a wife. I don't really get it. But I think they work because they kind of don't care that we don't get it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I feel like they keep factoring into the Doctor's life because he likes them. He respects them and trusts them a lot because they helped him get Amy...
100%. That's spot on. But why are they like? Is the Doctor bringing Strax around when he needs him, or is Strax just chilling, living in England and, you know, Victorian England with the Silurian?
According to that that short film thing, it sounds like he's living in Victorian England with them as their butler.
Right. Yeah.
Why are the three of them? This doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is my problem when I absorb Who is these are the things I think about. And like we talked about in the past, I really need to streamline that and just appreciate things for what they are, nothing too deep, not get my expectations too high, and just...
No. I mean, I think it's totally valid to expect some explanation for a lot of stuff, because Doctor Who has a tendency to kind of wipe away things and say, don't think about that too much, like magical, psychic, fairyland doctor. I believe in fairies, doctor.
Here are a couple things that that popped up just this episode that I felt did that. And one was when they're kind of patting the Doctor down, they pull out a ball of yarn and a doll out of his pocket.
Yeah, what's that all about?
What was that all about? And another thing that happens is the TARDIS disappears, dematerializes for no reason.
No, he explains it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, he kind of explains it at the end of the episode, but it really
is. That was just a... I mean, it's a nice nod, because apparently he's done that once a very long time ago.
Yeah.
But a lot of people kind of saw that as a storytelling cop out.
I think you're misinterpreting what I'm getting at. I'm not getting at like these random things that just feel like flavor, like them pulling the doll and stuff out of his jacket. It's just Doctor has a lot of crazy stuff in his jacket for no reason. He has a lot of crazy stuff on the TARDIS for no reason. He just collects dumb stuff sometimes. But I'm talking about like big things that just don't make like. Why would the Doctor not, when Clara fell in the snowman, why would the Doctor not just hop into the TARDIS and then teleport it down to below her so that she fell into the open TARDIS doors or something like that, you know? Like, stuff like that where it's just, like, they big in-universe, like, rules that they just don't explain. They say, well, there's a rule for this. The Doctor will say, like, I can't do that. but he won't tell you why he can't do that.
That's I'm not allowed to sneeze on a Tuesday. I can't tell you why.
Yeah.
But I just can't.
I can't cross my own timeline. Well, why? What happens?
Yeah.
Like, I can't. Some moments in time are fixed, and some moments in time are in flux. Well, why? I mean, I understand.
I can't visit Amy and Rory for the 40 years they live of their lives.
Well, yeah. Why? Yeah, but they never. They like to set a lot of rules and then never explain them those rules.
Yeah.
And that is what really annoys me about Doctor Who. Things happening just because they kind of happen, like Vastra and Jenny and Strax all living in Victorian England. I mean, they got to live somewhere, right? I mean, so why not there? But things where it's
that's okay. I'm fine with it. I'm the type of viewer that appreciates that one line. Like, oh, you know, ever since he got us dropped off here, I actually want to stay here because maybe he took them. Something happened after Amy and Rory, and then he blah, 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 and then that happens, and he's all mopey. But, okay, that's fine. Just give me that. Give me that one thing, line.
Did you watch the short?
Did I watch the short? Yeah.
I just assumed that he was hanging out with them because he needed somebody to hang out with, so he just, you know, just picked them. I mean, they seemed as good as anybody else, and they had just helped him, you know, save Amy and everybody like that. So they seemed as good of people as any. And they, you know, they're kind of a little collection of not necessarily his peers, but people that he can talk to and understand his situation. Like, he can talk to them about time travel and stuff.
But you don't think it's weird that he dropped off the Earth? Okay, we're way off course here.
What? I mean,
it's weird they dropped off the Potato Head future alien and the reptile lady in the part of the, like, American, like,
well, they were
history where they cannot show their faces ever.
They were already there. I just assumed that there was always some kind of reason that, like, that she had thought out in Victorian London or something like that.
She has a history with the Doctor. He found her. She was all angry, lost, and confused. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't then, but... And, you know, I don't know that. And same with Strax. Strax is a future war thing, bred for complete domination. What the hell is he doing in the carriage-based Victorian England? And
well,
it's okay.
I just want to say one last thing. I just want to say, like, that not everything that happens in the Doctor Who universe is because the Doctor says so, or because the Doctor wants. Like, how do you know that they just didn't want to live? I mean, in the short, you find out that Strax lives living with them because Jenny and Vastra asked him to live with them, and they offered him a place to stay. And
they only go where
the Doctor says.
Maybe, like you said, maybe she thought. But see, now we're actually writing fan fiction here. Maybe she thought. She thought out around then. She was the only one. It was a freak accident with all the Silurian computers. And the Doctor, I don't know, the TARDIS brought in there, found her, helped her, whatever. And she fell in love with a human girl. And then they all came together because a good man went to war. And then Strax died and somehow got brought to life. Which, by the way, in terms of things that need to be explained, that should be explained. Strax is an awesome recurring character. And then after he comes back to life, the Doctor's all mopey pouty. And they're all like, you should live with us. And, oh, man, there's this weird snow. Something's going on. Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Again, though, but in that short, didn't they just say, like, he wasn't really dying? He was just being overdramatic? Wasn't that the whole thing?
In the Christmas episode, the Doctor says he died and someone brought him back, or a friend brought him back to life.
Yeah, Jenny, in that little short, they mentioned that Jenny patched him up or something like that, and he was being overdramatic, and he wanted to die in battle.
That I don't know.
Man, go back and watch that short. Do your homework, Nord.
No, you didn't find an enjoyable one.
This is good radio.
This is
I'm
hot
sorry.
Stuff.
I'm making us argue about stuff we don't need to argue about.
We can
move on. I'm sorry.
Well, regardless.
Steve's right.
Yeah.
He dropped the microphone and ran off the stage. Well, regardless. We need to rate this episode. We need to rate this episode.
Well, that's much better, Dolly.
I have to enunciate. So how many moons of Mars do we give this episode?
Moons of no.
No. How many
no.
icebergs?
No.
Out of five?
No. Icebergs? They're no.
Soviet missiles?
How many nukes do we get out of a possible five nukes? How many Russian sailors do you...
yep, that's what we're... No, how many Sean Connerys? How about that?
Isn't there something we can talk about? Like, can we make a Davos reference here if we're not going to make an Ice Warrior reference?
Go ahead.
How
go
many
ahead.
Onions do we give this out of five?
I like that. Onion how many night? Onions?
How many onion knights?
Yes. How many onions?
How many onions?
How many missing fingertips?
How many? So ridiculous.
How many missing fingertips do we give this episode?
Stop it. That's not what I was talking about. Oh, God.
Sean, you go
dead
first.
Sons burned alive on the Blackwater. Do we get this? Oh, yeah. Spoilers.
Oh, jeez. How many kings are left at the end of Storm of... Oh, just kidding.
This is why we need to have that crossover podcast with Cast of Thrones.
All right. Hold on. Think of... Let this marinate in your head, because we do have a couple quick little bits of news to get to about the 50th anniversary.
Okay. Which...
yep.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So the first one...
Four,
I...
by the way.
Yeah. Four fingers.
Sean doesn't give a fuck.
He's like, whatever. So the biggest news, I think, that broke this week was... So obviously we knew David Tennant was going to be filming with Matt Smith. He was going to be up on this this episode of, or on the 50th anniversary. Just a couple days ago, actually yesterday, 2 days ago or so maybe, the two doctors were filming together during the 50th anniversary special. So they were interviewed, kind of talking about what to expect from the 50th, what it was like to work with each other. But they're both in the image that we have here. They're both in their doctor garb. They're kind of purplish brownish suits. Matt Smith has a purple. His suit is kind of a purple color, and then David Tennant has more of a brown suit. Regardless, they're in their Doctor Who attire.
Very season two. David Tennant too.
Yeah, very season two. David Tennant. Very, very good point. We have them there in front of a TARDIS, and it gave me awesome goosebumps.
Tennant's TARDIS.
What's that?
It's Tennant's TARDIS.
Oh, Tennant's TARDIS. Excellent. Very good point.
The windows are different. The color blue is a little different.
Yes, and it definitely looks like an older. Almost looks a little bit beat up, doesn't it? Kind of look like it's been through some heck.
Yeah, right. His was a little more of a...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? One thing, I mean, that pretty much means that he's not playing...
The clone.
The clone, yeah. He's not. He can't be playing him if it's Tennant's TARDIS, so it must be the real Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, pump the brakes there, Stormy. No, yes, I would say it's 95% likely, but seeing this is Doctor Who, I don't know if you guys are familiar... But there's a deleted scene at the end of,
the coral.
Which Davey said could be considered canon. Mm. So it wouldn't. I hate the idea that it's the.
What was that?
Doctor.
What was that deleted scene again?
Oh, where they drop him off in the other dimension, and they, in the deleted scene, they toss him a piece of something where he can grow his own TARDIS.
It's like a seed of a TARDIS or something.
And they're like, he's like, that takes thousands of years. And Dr. Donna is like, well, if you do blah, 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 you don't grow really fast. And he's like, wow, I never thought of that. You got a human, whatever. So it was completely cut, which sucks. But I can go into that rant another time. So, 90% sure it's probably – I can't imagine they're going to go into that. But
it would be crazy if they actually referenced a deleted scene in an episode that Davies made
They wouldn't have
ago.
To. All they could say is that he grew his own TARDIS. They wouldn't even have to
– But then you'd have tons of people asking, like, where the hell did he grow a TARDIS?
Just saying, I agree with you. I think it would be ridiculous, but I'm just saying it is possible.
Honestly, I think it's even a little bit crazy to assume that there are enough people who remember that there is a clone Doctor out there. There are not a lot of people doing podcasts about Doctor Who out there. There's probably a good contingent of people who would totally accept that, but I don't think they are going for that contingent necessarily on a week-to-week basis.
Mm-hmm.
Stormy, underestimating.
They're not,
all of the Who fans.
I don't. No, 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 not the, all. Not all the Who fans.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just saying that I think it would be kind of. I don't think that the from a writing perspective they would reference something so vital to the story. Like when they bring the Ice
Agreed.
Warrior out.
I agree.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to cut you off. Then. We're on the same page on this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I just, you know, I think it's funny that you think so poorly of most of the fan base. not everybody has a fancy podcast like us. You're absolutely right. You know, not everybody can talk about this nonsense for a half hour, 45 minutes every week.
Shot, I'm sorry. I didn't.
But that said, I think you could put really good money on this being season two, Rose and Doctor. So mm-hmm. before they get cut off in the void, before
yeah.
Martha, before Donna, all of that.
Now, Rose is a part of it, so remember.
Rose is a part of it. Yeah, so she's in the cast, but there's no one's seen her yet. No one has seen her on set. No one's seen her interacting with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's all like, I can't wait for Matt Smith's Doctor to meet Rose. And I'm thinking, yeah, that would be good. I'm not even sure that's going to happen, though.
Yeah, yeah, that could be true. Yeah. This could be something akin to David Tennant having to leave Rose, or he gets sucked into a... the TARDIS calls him back for a split second to go help.
Oh yeah, man! Imagine all this fanfare for her showing up, and she's literally just on his TARDIS for like a minute in the beginning, and then he's sucked out to somewhere else. Oh man! What a giant bean tease that would be from those weirdo Rose Tyler fans.
Oh. News also broke this week that John Sim, who played the Master. Was on the Jonathan Ross show.
Jonathan Ross.
I
think you need to pronounce it properly.
That's true. And then he will not be appearing as the Master.
Supposedly,
he is not. Not
didn't
going
they say
to
he
be
said part. That with a big grin or something too?
Yeah, I don't know. He did say he hasn't heard anything at all.
Wouldn't and just be stupid Moffat.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to note, though, too, is that just because even if John Sim isn't there to play the Master doesn't necessarily mean the Master couldn't be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Although we have no evidence to say that he would be involved. It's just, you know, a Time Lord. He could totally, you know, fucking regenerate.
Very true. Very true.
Could even be an old actor who played the Master. I don't know if any of them are still alive. I imagine that some of them must be.
So here's where everything kind of... here's what I'm more and more leaning towards being a case study, and that is or something actually being true.
Words.
I'm leaning towards words. So this whole season has been kind of relying on the kind of touching base with the Doctor's past, like what classic Doctor Who was, and he's using Clara as kind of the conduit for that, right? So he's being able to kind of reteach her his entire history as a Doctor. Kind of filling her in, so everywhere they go, they end up touching back on something that we hadn't seen of the latest few Doctors. And so, I think looking at what's happening with the 50th anniversary, with the villain that they have, you know, that they have there.
What villain?
The
Zygon?
The Zygon. I'm sorry. Yes, the Zygon character we haven't seen in a long time.
Wait, so, that's going to be in the 50th?
Yeah, the Zygon is.
When did we do that?
It's actually in the image.
I'm pretty sure it's been confirmed already, but it's there's a Zygon walking away in that picture. By the way, not to derail this, but does the guy walking next to the Zygon look familiar to anybody? Like, am I overthinking this?
Yes.
Well, do you guys have an image for me to look at here? Or
yeah, I'll send it. He's definitely I posted it in the chat there.
I don't see it in no chat. Oh, there it is.
He looks like an old timey. Like he's kind of wearing an older suit, doesn't he?
You're gonna tell me that doesn't look like the second Doctor?
I don't know.
Patrick Troughton?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
On to his right or to his left?
To his left.
There's no one to his right.
The one to his right?
There's no one to his right. There's only the old.
To the Zygon? There is a guy on his left, and then there's a guy in front of him, and to the right of the image.
The guy on his left.
Okay. I mean,
you know, it does kind of look like his, it looks like his jacket, but does not look like his pants.
I'm saying his hair looks like Chris Pertwee.
You mean, oh, Chris Pratt?
Well, didn't the second Doctor show up in the Five Doctors with gray hair?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, food for thought. He's got his whole structure. Everything reminded me. I don't know. I thought it was the second Doctor, but I was also very wrong about other pictures we've analyzed way back in the day. Silence at the Pandora opens.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Yeah.
So,
I'll bet you Zygon doesn't play a major role as the villain or anything like that.
Maybe they'll finally address the Pandora opening.
Maybe they'll address the TARDIS exploding.
Or maybe this is the sign-off for Stephen Moffat. Because what I feel is kind of happening is he is undoing a lot of the stuff that he had done up until this point. And we initially thought at the end of last season that the great question this season is Doctor Who. Doctor Who. And we come to find out at the beginning that the Doctor, all traces of the Doctor have been deleted. What if this is basically Stephen Moffat's send-off? He's kind of deleting his touches to the show so that whoever is the next, you know, producer, you know, head writer of the show takes over starts with a clean state.
How is he erasing this stuff? I must have missed
because it. I almost feel like he's purposefully bringing up stuff from classic Doctor Who to reset to before 2005, you know, to before the days.
Rather than introduce anything new, he's cleaning house, moved Amy and Rory. He erased the Doctor's files from out throughout the universe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he's got a new companion, new TARDIS, new everything, and he's using old villains and stuff so that he doesn't introduce anything new in order to tie off as many loose ends as possible without creating any new ones.
Exactly.
Is that what you're trying to get at?
Exactly. And that way he's able to gracefully walk off the show and whoever picks it up has a completely fresh start with Doctor Who.
Minus the Silence, the Spoonheads, and a couple other guys.
Well,
I like to think that if Moffat were to leave the show, though, he would just like take the opportunity to do something incredibly crazy and stupid to just fucking make the person coming up next have to really work.
So you guys don't think he's going to be around for season 8? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think he's going to be around for season 8. The more I'm leading through this season, the more I'm going through the season and how I don't want to say I've been disappointed with this season, but it hasn't quite lived up to my expectations, at least these first few episodes of the second.
One of us.
I love the first half of season 7.1, but 7.2 hasn't been.
Well, I feel like I read recently that Smith and – or Matt and Jenna are going to be around for season 8.
Yes, they are.
So
they're going to be around.
I would find that very interesting. I don't think we've ever had that, where the showrunner leaves but the stars stay. When Davies left, he took everybody was just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting, but I don't know. I'll be shocked if Moffat's not back for season 8, especially if he's using the 50th as a frigate springboard for the future, not the past.
Well, speaking of how we feel about Doctor Who, why don't we go ahead and give our ratings right now and wrap this up?
I like that idea. I like that idea.
By the way, I don't know if you guys talked about this last week. Did you see the picture with the woman? They were acting across from Matt Smith, and she had the Fourth Doctor scarf.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Someone. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Spoiler cast, Steve. Someone came up with a theory that instead of working in the Doctors themselves, they're going to use these as homages.
Yes, yes. I definitely think that that's what's happening.
Wait, what's happening? I don't
that
even understand.
That sucks, dude. I mean,
definitely think that's happening.
So, Steve, to sum it up, instead of being able to get the Fourth Doctor, the Seventh, the Eighth, in the episode itself, they're going to have, like, the Fourth Doctor's scarf, and the Seventh Doctor's whatever, and the Eighth Doctor's it's whatever they were known for iconically at the time, they're going to have those show up. So this woman was wearing the Fourth Doctor scarf.
That seems dumb.
It does seem dumb, but I mean, some people are theorizing, well, maybe it was given to her, and there's a reference to that, and maybe this, and maybe that. So
Doctor's traveling and meeting all the people that the other Doctors met.
Something like that, yeah. I'm going to be disappointed about that if it's true, but the more I talk to – or not talk, yeah, I wish. The more I read about all these Doctors and they're going to these cons and whatever, and they're all saying, nobody's talked to us.
They don't – Yeah, they don't seem like they wouldn't be adverse to it or anything.
They're
like
not.
That.
They're absolutely not. They all said they would love it, but no one has. Again, if this is the going line, no one has contacted them now. And this is the final bit that I'll say about this today. Anyway, I realized that I can adjust my expectations accordingly if they would just come out and confirm that no one else is coming.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's no more of this smoke and mirrors, forgive my language, bullshit. Just say, okay, Eccleston passed, which I think they just confirmed.
Yeah,
We're not getting, you know, everybody wants McCann, whatever. He, gotcha, he's not coming back ever. Who cares?
He never was there in the first place.
Yeah, and, you know, you're not getting Baker, you're not getting McCoy, whoever. But you're getting Tennant, you're getting Smith, and, you know, it's going to be great. And I would, you know, it would take me probably a couple months. But I feel like I would then go into November knowing that was coming. And then I could just be like, okay, I'm going to appreciate this for what it is. It could have been all these other things. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, but I won't be disappointed watching it versus if I watch it because they never came out and said all this stuff. And then nothing comes out of, you know, it's just Matt and David, which is really cool. I feel like I'm just going to – it's just going to disappoint me as I watch, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree with you.
And of course, I like the idea of surprises, but at least tell us, okay, well, yeah, there might be one or two more doctors, but we're not going to tell you which ones. Even that would be okay, right?
Mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
There might be a ton of cameos, not your, you know, not what you're expecting. But of course, that would scare me because for all I know, that could be a friggin' tin can that showed up in one of Muppets episodes, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like if they would just tell us, it would do a lot of good to kind of just temper everybody's, you know, expectations. So, but I feel very passionately about this. So maybe I'm alone in that.
No, I'm kind of the same way. I wish there was just some way to just give us a finite yes or no, so that we know
exactly
just so we know what to expect, just so we temper ourselves. Speaking of tempering ourselves, we should get the rating for this wonderful episode. Did we decide on a rating scale?
Onions, wasn't it?
Onions.
Ice Warriors.
How many?
You want to do Ice Warriors?
All right. How many Ice Warriors? Out of five, Steven.
Three.
Steven gives a three. Sean?
Four. Ice Warriors.
God damn it, Sean.
I will also give a three to this episode. I always seem to rate a little harder because I seem to be expecting a lot more from this. I think last season or last half of the season, I rated it really high, higher than you guys. And this part, I'm rating a lot lower than you guys. So.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more impatient with Doctor Who.
Yes,
and so
thank you.
Yeah, so I'm becoming less and less lenient as we go along. I don't know if I would even given Night Terrors a three or something. Night Terrors I probably would have given it a three at the time. I'll probably give it a one now. But I'm getting so impatient with Doctor Who and so fed up with this stuff. I'm just not giving it the leeway that I used to.
My score last week was 2.5, which was the lowest I would have ever thought I would have given a Doctor Who.
It's interesting because I feel like going into our season of this podcast, I was the most vocal, apathetic, like I'm gonna burn out, but approaching this episode, I think it's interesting I gave it the highest score out of the three of us because I guess maybe I just appreciate it as it is, as a standalone Monster of the Week type story, or maybe I've just given up. I'm just so burnt that I'm just like, I'll take anything that's even remotely good. But, you know, it is what it is. And as always, you know, we'll see how it stacks up when we can watch the whole season back-to-back and how it is at the end. But
I think it's going to be really disjointed watching this on a DVD.
Yeah. Well, you never know, because if it goes right from Pawn to Sad Doctor to all the Clara stuff, it might be okay.
Maybe.
But that'll be telling. But, yeah, so I do like that we're still – we are not in a place where we're getting bad Who. And that's really
right. Yeah,
you know, we're not getting Idiot's Lantern Who. We're not getting.
We're not getting Fear Her.
Fear Her. We're not getting any of that stuff. So, yeah.
All right, guys. I think that's it. Thank you, everybody. You've been fantastic for joining us this week. Hope this was as entertaining for you as it was for us. Please follow us at Twitter Lonely TARDIS at Twitter. Please rate and review us on iTunes. It's so important. It helps get our name out there. We can do more fun things. You can follow us individually at CoolRats, K-E-W-L-R-A-T-S. That is me, yours truly, Dolly. You can follow Sean.
At Sean Orton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
And you can follow Steven.
I am at Steven Strom, S-T-E-V-E-N-S-T-R-O-M.
And with that, we are out. We'll see you guys on next week's episode. Hide. Woo!